there's something sad about that a little bit, that I'm going to save all this money for when I'm like 70 years old. And that's when I'm going to start to enjoy it. Versus now, I'm like, man, I can do anything. My body works great. I have awesome friends. How would my life be if I started to spend some of that now and didn't wait until the very end to try to enjoy it?
One of my favorite business people to read about is Warren Buffett. The reason I like him is he's full of wisdom. And in particular, I've always enjoyed what he had to say about patience. He's got this one quote that says, "Someone is sitting in the shade today because someone planted a tree a long time ago." In other words, have patience. That's something Warren Buffett preaches constantly. And frankly, I dig it. However, Warren Buffett's in his 90s. How much more patience does he need? Retire, spend your money, be crazy, do what you want. At what point in your life should you stop delaying gratification and just do exactly what you want when you want? I mean, the point of making money is to do whatever you want. And at times, if you don't want to work on this thing anymore and you have money, why not just stop? Just do whatever you want. In today's episode, I want to talk about people who made a bunch of money at a young age and did the one thing that most everyone I know in that category doesn't do. They walked away. They retired early. You see, building something great is hard. It takes commitment. It takes so much time. It takes a lot of stress, and you're totally bought in and it becomes your life. And a lot of people, whether they're in that position or they're not in that position, what they say is when they get to the end and they're able to sell and cash out, they want to do one thing. They want to retire early. But I'm curious, what happens to those people when they actually do that, when they stop?
My self-worth was based in how hard I worked on something. I didn't have that anymore. And I was searching for that next grind or addiction to work on something. And that's that lost period.
So that's Ryan, which is a name I just made up because he doesn't want to share his actual name on account of the amount of personal information he's going to share with us in this episode. Another guest in this episode who we're going to hear from is named Jeff. He also is going to be anonymous.
My name is Jeff.
Has had a very similar experience to Ryan's.
That feeling of feeling like you're lost is a real feeling.
In this episode of MoneyWise, we're going to talk about what it's like to walk away from the hustle after you've already made your money, how to find purpose after that exit, and of course, like we do in every episode, we're going to talk about how much money our guests made, how they invest their money, and how they spend it. And the most important thing is their retirement permanent. I'm Sam Parr, and this is MoneyWise. There's a ton of podcasts and resources out there that teach you how to make money, how to get rich, but there aren't a lot of resources out there on what to do with the money after you've made it and how to deal with all the changes in your life. I'm the co-founder of Hampton, a private community for founders, CEOs, business owners, people who run these really large, profitable companies. On average, they do about $25 million a year in revenue, and I'm able to see all types of conversations people have behind closed doors. That's the inspiration for this podcast, MoneyWise. We talk to high net worth people, hear about the personal finance situations and life situations that typically never happen open in public. Not only will we hear their stories, they're going to talk about the real numbers, how much money they make, how much money they spend, their portfolio, all those juicy details that you usually never hear about. Both of our guests today went through a similar experience of working hard and, to be honest, getting really lucky, and they made a lot of money at a very young age. We're going to get specifics on how much they made and how they made their money in a second. So when you've earned all of this money at a young age, you have a choice that people rarely ever have, which is, should I just stop working now? I think having that choice is everyone's dream. And if you talk to a lot of people, they would say, yes, you should stop working. But the thing about working, particularly if you're a really driven person, a type of person who has the ability to retire early, working brings a lot of purpose. It becomes your identity, becomes why you wake up in the morning. Not everyone is like that, though. A lot of people, but not everyone. In the case of Ryan, it was never really about money. It was all about just making things. He just loved to tinker and see products come to life.
I was just always building little apps, doing a lot of freelance design. Any type of website that someone needed, I was like, I could build it. I was just poking around. And that's when I built a lot of different apps that solved my needs. So we were selling clothing and, you know, we needed an inventory app. So I built one. A friend needed a texting marketing app. There was no Klaviyo and stuff then. Built something simple.
That love eventually snowballed into a business, which itself just kept snowballing.
Like, I had almost no expectations. I wanted the next customer, and I loved seeing the Stripe email. Like, you remember when Stripe first started? It was like, congratulations, you received whatever, like $19 or something like that. That was so good. That felt good. And it felt good to just keep building. But I never thought about exiting, selling, hiring, doing all that stuff.
Jeff, on the other hand, he inherited his entrepreneurial mindset.
My dad and I, when I was in middle school, sold blue blocker sunglasses at like county fairs for cash. And we would go to like the most redneck, like motorcycle festivals or whatever. That was father-son bonding. Like, we're selling sunglasses.
Now, just to kind of define terms here and give context on what I meant when I said retiring. Jeff is in his early 40s, Ryan is in his 30s, which means retiring when most of your peers aren't and they're in the prime of their career, that's a whole other topic that we need to discuss later in this episode. But for now, I want to talk about Ryan's journey. He had a full-time job and was building his company on the side for a couple of years.
The company was doing about $300K in revenue. And I was still scared to go full-time on it though, because it was like, wait a second. There's no W-2, you know, paycheck coming every 2 weeks. There's no lunch that was served. They paid for a cell phone and I have to do that and insurance. How do I do that? So it was more the mental space of going full time when it was not. I should have done it sooner. It was stupid not to, but.
What was the profit on 300 grand in revenue?
Dude, like almost all of it. It was me coding it. It was me doing the support. It was me doing the sales. I started to hire a contractor to help me do a little bit of the coding because I wanted to move a little faster.
And yet you are still nervous about leaving a W-2.
Yeah, because we're trained, you know, I was raised to like, that's exactly what you do. That's what you're supposed to live, is to go through and you work for someone else.
At the time, how much was your burn, your monthly, your personal expenses?
I remember rent was about $1,000 a month. We went out a lot. Maybe that was another $1,000, $2,000 a month, probably $3,000 a month.
That's it. So only $3,000 a month. You have saved up a nice chunk of change.
Yeah.
Your business is doing hundreds of thousands in cash flow.
You know, and it's funny, and a lot of the team, when they joined, I remember some team members are like, man, I could see the way like where this is going. I've been through something similar, and we didn't even have an equity package for the longest time. And it was just cash. And again, we were following the base camp. Like, you know, if there's a sale, you split whatever percentage of the sale. The only reason why I started to think about that was because I was getting tired.
So you sold in 21. When were you like, all right, I'm going to actually consider a sale seriously?
4 months prior.
No shit.
Yeah. That's why I didn't know about the QSBS. Like all the stuff that I feel like is trendy and everything now, I didn't set that up. Now, fortunately, that time was really froth. Like things are very good in tech and they still have, you know, they're still pretty good, but it's a unique time.
What did you sell for?
A little north of 30.
What did you walk away with at the end of that?
About 20.
And so that's how he made his next big move, exiting. That was in 2021. For a couple of years, Ryan continued to work for the company, but in a different capacity, which basically just means when you're running a company and you're the CEO of your own company and you sell it, you have to work a lot less. It was only recently that he decided to completely restructure his involvement with the company and mostly retire, meaning he mostly did nothing. Yes, Ryan still has some small involvement with the company he built, but it's not a full-time job. And it could be a real emotional thing to let go completely. Jeff's story, it's a little bit different. It doesn't involve a big exit. We'll explain in a couple minutes. At this point, Ryan's in his early 30s and has made around $20 million, a life-changing amount of money. But the biggest impact wasn't hitting that dollar mark.
I think the hitting the number part wasn't as impactful. More so was that I felt I had bent reality a bit for me and my family. I feel like we accomplished something that changed our trajectory in a way. We're able to have like bigger house or a lot more freedom or, you know, more trips or these luxurious experiences that we really couldn't do before because of all of this other, you know, stuff that led up to it.
The sudden new reality has everything to do with why Ryan stepped away from the grind.
I feel like I worked hard for a long time on this and was able to exit it, but still feel like I won the lottery. And because of that, I don't want it to change. Like I do want to allow this to sustain us for a long period of time. So if I don't want to screw it up, it's like, I'm like trying to kindle a little flame, like blow on it a little bit and like, you know, keep it alive for as long as I possibly can.
Now about Jeff, I told you his story is quite a bit different. It wasn't just one big sale that made him rich, gave him financial freedom. It was more like a frog in boiling water. I freaking hate that metaphor, but that's the best I could think of for now. It just means that he started and sold a few businesses that gave him enough financial freedom to step away.
There's been like a couple times in my life where I've made about $5 million and have been very lucky with those.
It was just a few years into his most recent business, though, where he finally had a life-changing epiphany.
I was busting my butt from
the Globex Corporation.
Like killing myself, like so frustrated with the team and the staff and drama. And one year I'm working with the accountant and it's like, oh,
nuclear power plant
made $400,000 and your stocks made like $700,000. And at that moment it was like, wait, what? I did nothing with all of these investments. I didn't even think about them. They're just sitting there. And that made me more money than this business that I'm killing myself over. And so that was like a wake-up call for me that started the beginning of me thinking like, oh, wow, like there's other ways to make money once you have money.
The thing about selling your business, and this is something that I personally have experienced, is you get this huge amount of euphoria right away. It feels like, yes, I have finally done this. I achieved what I was trying to achieve, which was to make a life-changing amount of money, and I can relax. I've got this huge burden off of me. But then, and I think everyone goes through this, I've seen this in Hampton. I've seen everyone have the same conversation, which is like, what's next? What should I be doing now? I'm unhappy. How do I spend my time? And it's this classic phrase that people tell you, but it's unfortunately one of those things that you kind of have to experience to understand it, which is, the journey is worth more than the destination. But because it's hard work and it takes up so much time, in the thick of it, it's actually hard to think that you might actually miss this. And even if you don't think that at the time, I think a lot of people, not everyone, but a lot of people, they actually do. They miss it. They miss the grind. This is something that Jeff had already been familiar with.
When we sold the family business, that was so weird to go from literally being the center of attention, everybody needing you, wanting you, your phone blowing up, being all this attention on you, and then you sign it and you just walk away. It was the weirdest experience.
Ryan described that feeling as going through a loss, almost like he was grieving.
I think the identity problem was big for me the first year. I think I realized that was because my self-worth was based in how hard I worked on something, like how many hours I put into something, how many times I think about it, how many podcasts I listened to and Jason Lemkin blog posts I read and like newsletters I could, like it was all based on all of this like hustle. And then I didn't have that. Like almost, it takes maybe 6 or 8 months or whatever to really transition and get new leadership and all that stuff. Then after that, I didn't have that anymore. And I was searching for that next kind of grind or addiction to work on something. And that's that lost period.
Now, here's the deal. These are first world problems. But you know what? First world problems are still problems. That emotional loss was significant. But is $20 million enough to fill that void? The simple answer, no. Money can't replace the passion or drive or purpose you get from building a career or building a company. It's not just a loss of direction or a loss of purpose or importance, which is huge. Humans need that. We need to feel needed. But it's also a loss of community. By the way, I've experienced this as well. I sold one business, I had enough, and I started a new one because I didn't want to feel alone. I needed community. Here's what Jeff had to say.
While I go to a lot of events, I'm no longer like invited to those same dinners and groups that other business owners and entrepreneurs go to.
Both of these things are largely part of your external world, and the loss is difficult, but it can be overcome with time. But there is something a bit deeper that you lose as well. So when you build a business that you eventually sell for tens of millions of dollars, typically the type of person who's able to pull that off, they're incredibly dedicated, they're ambitious, they have an action-oriented personality to be able to pull that off. And it sounds weird, but that intense drive, If you sell your company and you have enough money or you make enough money that you don't actually have to work again, it sort of feels like that drive is going to go away. And it feels weird. You're like, look, I used to work my butt off because I loved it and I was ambitious. And then once you get a little soft and on a big fat cushion, it feels like, oh my God, I'm way less intense. I'm not nearly as driven. I'm not nearly as hungry. And it feels really strange. It almost feels scary. In fact, I've got a friend named Jack. He recently retired from a big exit. He started a company in his early 20s. And by the time he was like 29, he sold it for $850 million. For years, he struggled mentally. And I think he's still going through it a bit. And for him, accepting the loss of his drive is something he had to get comfortable with.
When I was younger, I think I had, in America, they more say it's like chip on your shoulder, that I had something to prove. Then after having a big exit, I didn't have that same drive to prove something anymore. But if I had not had a good exit, or by my perception to be good, then I think that I would still have that motivation that like, oh, now people are still doubting me, so I still got to prove stuff. So that would have been what would be driving me.
Jack says that there's pros and cons to not having that drive anymore.
When I was doing it, then I was sacrificing my living conditions to live in there, health that I was eating crap, I was not working out, didn't really prioritize friendships much, did not do any dating or anything. So making a lot of sacrifices, but yeah, it was really fulfilling to go all in on one thing. I think it served, I appreciate that at that time in my life. Now I'm thankful probably not to have that anymore. But yeah, sometimes do miss that. It's energizing to be so driven. But now, yeah, maybe a different stage in my life. And I am also feeling more comfortable with myself. And the things that I'm working on now, I can maybe get fulfillment from in different ways than, oh, I need to prove the world wrong.
Now, even if you've come to terms with this internally, there's still a bunch of external pressure. Or at least I think there appears to be. And this pressure, it kind of reminds me of what happens with a lot of athletes. They win a big championship and they're at the post-game press conference or the post-fight press conference. And oftentimes the press, their very first question is, what's next? And that happens with entrepreneurs. They run their company for a decade, they sell it. And within a week or 2 weeks, people always ask, well, what's next?
And they're asking that because they care about you and they believe in you. And as an entrepreneur, it can be a little unsettling. Like there's like you're only needed or wanted.
It's pressure.
Yeah. That there's like a little bit of pressure or a lot of pressure on what that is.
The thing is that external pressure, I think it could be a bit of an illusion. And I try to default to they're just asking to be nice. Or they're just trying to make conversation. And this is something that I learned from Jack.
You don't necessarily need to feel that as a pressure, whether it takes you 1 week to find what things you would like to go into next, or 5 or 10 years. I don't think that life is not always like a scoreboard, that you're getting scored with your efficiency to arrive at the next step.
And giving into that pressure, like giving into a lot of external stuff, frankly, it leads down a path of unfulfillment because you're not really doing it for yourself. You're doing it for others.
At some point, they're just like, I'm just going to start another company because I don't know, I don't have anything else to do and I'm good at it. So I'm just going to start it. There's no reason they're doing this. They're just doing it because they maybe haven't sat long enough with the uncomfortable feeling of what else could there be.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. You can earn 4 times points on your top 2 eligible spending categories every month, like transit, U.S. restaurants, and gas stations. That's the powerful backing of American Express. 4 times points on up to $150,000 in purchases per year. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
I'm going to briefly touch on something we talked about in our very first episode with my buddy Ankur. Ankur has sold his company in his early 30s for something like $200 million. And if you go to that first episode, he breaks down his whole portfolio expenses. It's pretty great. And what I learned in that episode is that having money doesn't immediately make your life better. It's a tool, and it's a great tool, and you can use it to make your life better, but you could also use it to make your life worse. And so if you're going to retire early, your life needs a little bit of reshaping. Suddenly having financial and, more important, time freedom is great, but your next step is figuring out how can you enrich your life so you can enjoy that retirement. Ryan has been very happy since he decided to step away, but that's because he put effort into making it work.
I wrote this post where it's like, I feel like your job can be to make your life fucking awesome. It doesn't need to be what you thought of what a job is. That is the job now.
And he takes his new work really seriously.
You know, we went to Antarctica last year, looking at Kenya this year. So we're able to like create these experiences. We hosted our whole family. There was like 30 or so people. We had people set up tables and brought in food and like had all these activities rented out, a pickleball court. We took everybody for surf lessons. Those memories and those pictures, I look at them every time and I think, wow, it's crazy that we can create situations like this to happen. And it's not stressful, or not overthinking it, but it's really special.
But those aren't all the things that Ryan is doing. He also started his own blog. It's called After the Exit, and it shares his experiences of starting and selling the company and what he does after the sale. I recommend you guys check it out. It's awesome. And Jeff's situation is similar. He's out there enjoying his time and doing what he loves. In fact, when my producer called him for this pre-interview, he was in line at a taco truck at an amusement park, and this was at like 11 a.m. on a Tuesday. But Jeff spends the bulk of his time on passion projects, which I can't break down exactly in this podcast because it will give it away. But like his other companies, his passion projects have also been very successful. And it's been a key aspect to his happiness.
I probably would feel lost and like a total waste of space. But because I've had that project and those hobbies and those other interests, that has really helped give me meaning and purpose.
It's awesome that both Ryan and Jeff have found purpose from stepping all the way, but the sad truth is that may not come as quickly or easily to most people. My friend Jack struggled with this a ton after his exit, and after years of working on his mental health, I think that he's now finally starting to understand how he can bring purpose and motivation back into his life.
When I sat with it, I felt I'm not motivated to make more money. Kind of feel like, okay, now I have enough money. Instead, I think I'll be motivated, or I would like to work on projects where I can have more impact. For me, that looks like starting some different charitable projects. And now I'm working on a project where it's prioritizing mental health for other people.
All right, so one of the biggest fears, it's a fear we talk about in this podcast all the time, so if you listen to all of them, you're going to be sick of hearing this. But a big fear of people who start and eventually sell a company is running out of money. And not just running out of money, for some reason, managing your money, even if you don't have to, even if you can just set it in the index and just let it ride, managing the money, for some reason, starts to become a full-time job. And Ryan, he's a big proponent of financial advisors.
I feel like the internet like really shits on financial advisors, and probably for good reason. Like I bet 80% are just kind of scummy, or they're bad at communicating, or they're more self-motivated. And granted, this firm I work with is not a fiduciary, so you could argue that the same is true there. But this referral came to me from a mentor that sold his business before and that he works with them. And he basically was just like, look, they all are going to do something similar. But which is the firm that you can really talk to and they'll explain things and they'll take the time with you and can help you through this? And that's why I went with this. Whereas I did compare the fixed rate folks and the other folks and all the different banks. And yeah, I mean, sometimes, I don't know, did you go into the rooms like physically with them, or did you just do all Zooms if you talk to any of them?
So what I tell people is after a sale, like if you want, just do like treasury or bonds for basically a whole year and just get used to things because everyone's going to sell you stuff. I was lucky like you where I had a friend who had been there before and he made all the mistakes and he just introduced me to all the people that he trusted. And so that helped me. And so I went with that person eventually and my portfolio is very easy. And so I didn't meet with many people because I had a relationship with one person leading up to it. And this person knew that I wanted boring. I don't want anything sexy. I go, if I can get a 7% return for the rest of my life every year, I would be incredibly happy.
Did you feel like you wanted income right away?
After 6 months, yeah. And it's a very overwhelming feeling because you could tell me how you felt. I felt like it was a burden for a little bit. It was like, oh my gosh, I can't lose this.
Yeah. The psychological application of it's a little bit tricky. And that's where the advisors personally helped me a bit to like calm me down or, you know, think about things a little more rationally.
So where's your income source now?
So part of it is still helping out with the company. So there's a salary there. And then the rest of it is just the portfolio spitting off dividends. It's kind of split into a fixed income portion and an equity portion. So the fixed income portion also generates like a tax advantaged bucket of cash every month too.
So then what's your portfolio like now? Tell me, how is it invested?
60% is in equities and 40% I left with a financial advisor who does fixed income, like a lot of like private credit type stuff, muni bonds. He's got some other like kind of private related stuff there. And then the equity side is all ETFs. So pretty simple. Russell 2000, S&P 500, some developed international and a little bit of like developed dividend growth type companies.
And the 40%, what do you expect the returns on that to be?
You know, what's interesting is I actually look at that more on an after-tax basis, but that's around kind of mid 3% after-tax.
So 3% of 20 million is 600,000, which is, what is that, 50,000 a month? Is that how you were budgeting it?
Yeah, I want it to be a portion of whatever the 3% was, right? Because there's a lot of articles out there now that does the 3% rule apply because of inflation or like, how does this exactly work? And I'm like, I'm not going to get into the weeds on this. I can't figure this exactly out. So if I have that cushion of whatever the 3% is, so yeah, let's say the 50K a month, and then my spend is like 25 to 30, awesome. I feel good.
What do you spend it on?
We have two places. So I'd say 40, 45% is just for like mortgage, tax, call it like utility type housing buckets. And then we eat out probably half the week. So maybe that's 3K a month. I bucket travel, 2K a month or something, some shopping, a couple grand a month, gifts. I'm really getting into some hobbies. So that is a surprising spend.
Now I want to backtrack a little bit and I want to focus for a second on something Ryan mentioned right there. The stock market, I hate to admit it because I try to just set it and forget it. It is anxiety inducing. And it's particularly anxiety-inducing when you're trying to live off that lump sum of money. My advice to Ryan and everyone else, 80% index funds, 20% bonds. Easy as cream cheese. You can do the math on figuring out how much money you need, which is, for a lot of people, roughly 3% a year of your total sum. That's usually enough that you don't ever run out. And if you've done that math, you gotta just have faith that you're not gonna run out because that just typically is not the case. In fact, Jeff has also had some stock market-induced anxiety.
In those moments when my net worth was the highest because I'm in the stock market, I think I was kind of the unhappiest, or not unhappiest, but you're just refreshing and like you're checking and you're looking at the stock. But when the market got hit pretty significantly and I had a huge downturn in my wealth, yeah, I did feel some stress and pressure and more of a focus on how to make more money to at least even out my burn.
Were you able to do that? Or do you still just live off like some type of draw or dividend from your principal?
Now I have a little bit of investments that spit off a little bit of cash. Imagine that I have some dividend stocks or private credit loans that generate 10% a year or occasional real estate investments that will pay out. And because my burn is, let's say, a quarter million a year, it's fairly manageable.
Look, there's a ton of pressure to keep your money and there's a ton of anxiety that comes with it. In fact, I think that the negative feelings that you have when you lose something, when you lose money in particular, it actually hurts more than how good it feels to earn it in the first place. And because of that, you feel a lot of stress and a lot of anxiety. Let's take a lesson from Jack. He made a ton of money. And yet he still had a ton of financial stress, which in hindsight was completely avoidable.
Being amongst peers who maybe have had an exit and stuff, the discussion kind of felt pressure because everybody's talking like, oh, I'm getting like 20% IRR on my money or whatever. And then so I kind of felt that I should be feeling the same, I guess, because I was getting these inputs that other people considered like, oh, how much money am I making a year? Even though I actually didn't really need to make more money. I guess thought like, oh, if I'm not making those, then I guess I'm doing bad or I'm running out of money or something. And having that as a data point, I just invested in much too much different stuff. And it's caused an extreme amount of anxiety to administer those when it's doing tax returns. If I move house and I need to update the address, that's anxiety of my own making. With hindsight, I would have preferred to keep it much, much more concentrated. Probably most of my money in an ETF, like a Vanguard ETF, like the S&P 500 or VTI, which is a bit similar but broader. Maybe a little bit in a real estate fund. I wouldn't probably have done startup investing, for example.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. You can earn 4 times points on your top 2 eligible spending categories every month, like transit, U.S. restaurants, and gas stations. That's the powerful backing of American Express. 4 times points on up to $150,000 in purchases per year. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Money should make your life easier, not more complicated. If you're ready to step away and retire, go as simply as possible. Let your money work for you and do not get caught up in what everyone else is doing. Plus, you have to remind yourself, no one knows what they're doing anyway. There's a reason why virtually no hedge funds can outperform the market over a few decades. And here's the other thing. When you retire young, you got to remember, you're young. Retirement does not have to be a lifelong commitment. Thinking it has to be permanent, that's just putting unnecessary pressure on yourself. Retirement is supposed to be freedom, which means you can go back to not being free if you want. You can go back to working. In fact, Ryan told us that he is thinking about going back, although going back and returning to work, it might look a little bit different than how he used to do it.
I couldn't imagine really managing a team right now. I'm still a little like toasty from it, but maybe. But I may do it a little differently. Maybe that's the Twitter sphere of like cash flowing businesses and service-based businesses and this type of stuff. But I think my bread and butter is software, so I'd probably play around with something small at some point in there.
Same with Jeff. He's not ruling out the possibility.
If I find something that really, really bothers me, or that I feel that I can add an extreme amount of value where people are begging me to do this, where it makes sense to run it as a business, then I wouldn't be opposed to it.
Do you think that the majority of people, though, aren't like you and they just get back into something in hopes that they experience that rush again? Or do you think that people are more like you where they are methodical and are willing to wait or never do it again?
I respect people who keep going. I want to fly on your private jet. Like, I want to have friends that have amazing houses, and maybe that need, once I get a family or kids, will come back. But for the moment, I'm not feeling a sense of guilt to enjoy this time in my life, which I recognize is a very special time in my life, that I will not be able to have this time back. And I'm trying to live in that moment and appreciate that for what it is.
Do you think that your life is the way it is mostly because you are wealthy and single versus wealthy and with a family? And will that change?
100%. I think that the freedom and flexibility that I have and that I value so highly right now, it is largely indicative of the fact that I know that that will go away once I have a family and a relationship.
So does it feel like you're trying to rush to get it all in or something before, like, you're trying to like blow your load so you're completely empty by the time you get married?
I think maybe there was a little bit of that some time ago. I don't feel that now, but maybe trying to travel the world, I remember that there would be certain days where I would look at the calendar and I'd be like, wow, I could go to Tokyo today. In fact, I did that one weekend. It was like a Tuesday, and like on Thursday, I was like flying to Tokyo. Or even a few weeks ago, I was like, I want to go to Mexico tomorrow. Do you want to go? And so me and a friend like just went to Mexico City the next day. But I don't feel like I'm trying to get it in. If anything, having a team and working on my projects may be distracting me from the larger goal.
Of what?
Of just thinking about what's next. So like, I've actually been thinking about trying to spend down my money and not being afraid to say, hey, what would my life be like if I wanted to spend $1 million this year and not be afraid to? Right now, we have this idea that we have to die with more than we have now, that like this money is not meant to be spent. And there's something sad about that a little bit, that I'm going to save all this money for when I'm like 70 years old. And that's when I'm going to start to enjoy it. Versus now, I'm like, man, I can do anything. My body works great. I have awesome friends. How would my life be if I started to spend some of that now and didn't wait until the very end to try to enjoy it?
How do you balance that and potentially the fact that you'll never start something again and the fear of running out?
I've never thought that I would spend it all the way down. I think I would always have a, let's say, $10 million buffer as a backstop. Because I have more than $10 million, that hasn't occurred to me. And that's not a fear that I have.
So then you're comfortable spending it all. That exercise of like, what if I spent it? You're comfortable with that.
I'm comfortable to start thinking about it. It is, you know, I'm flying to New York in a few days. I'm still flying coach. I'm not like burning it on business because I'm like, yeah, what's the difference between this? Is that worth $700?
Now, the last thing I think that's important to consider if you are like Ryan and Jeff and you are thinking about retiring early is that the early part of retiring early is kind of unique. Most, if not all of your friends who are around the same age, they are not going to be in similar stages of life as you. If that is the case, according to Jeff, it's just a matter of location and you may want to consider relocating.
I remember when I left New York City and I was looking at some different towns to live in. And one day I was in Dallas. I just really wanted to like go out and like be with a friend and throw frisbee. And I called all the people I knew in Dallas and nobody could go hang out. And it was a really sad moment for me where I knew then I was like, this is not the town for me. I think there are only a few places that one can exist with such freedom and not get a little sad, where you can live in a town or an environment with people that have schedule flexibility. That's where I live now. I think New York City and other major metropolis areas are great for that.
All right, we've covered a lot in this episode, and it's a huge topic. There's a bunch of little small subjects that we could probably go deeper on in later episodes within this episode, and I think we might do it if you want them. And remember, that's a big if, because, well, I'll tell you at the end of this episode why I said because. But let's wrap up here with a little bit of advice from Ryan for anyone interested in selling and walking away, or those who just have.
I would absolutely think about what your life you'd like it to be after. So that is figured out. And then you spend less time figuring it out later. So it's hard to imagine, but imagine your calendar was basically had one call on it. What are you spending the rest of the day doing? Are you going to the gym in the morning? Are you playing tennis? Like, what are you doing? Optimize for tax as much as you can based on your timeline. There's still an element of luck with selling the business and what the time is of the market and how things are valued. So definitely optimize for tax there. I would consider a little bit of the investment side of what do you think that you would start to allocate into later? So then you have a little bit of a set, like a little foundation versus, ah, shit, now what do I do, right? You like put in the treasuries and then you have to figure out what does all the rest of this stuff mean?
Now, the reason why I said that we may not go further on all the topics within this episode, but we might, is because these episodes are a lot of work and I'm only going to keep making them if you, my dear listener, want more. And so if you want more, you can find me at Twitter, TheSamPar, or go to the podcast app that you're on and leave a review. Let me know. You can let me know if you want more episodes. And if you do, what do you want the episodes to cover? And of course, if you hate this, you hate MoneyWise, you hate me, I want to hear from you too. Let me know what you think. We'll either stop or we'll keep going. It all depends on your feedback. And I'm going to remind you guys that if you are a business owner, if you're a CEO, if you're a startup founder, and you love these types of conversations, if you love the types of conversations that deal with when it's the right time to fire people and how to do that, when it's the right time to celebrate, how to spend your money, all these conversations that you have when you're running your business that you can't have with anyone else or that you can't Google the answers to these certain questions, you guys have to check out Hampton. It's joinhampton.com. We've got
thousands of members who fit this criteria, and it's awesome to see all these conversations. My partner Joe and I review 100 of the people who apply. We're the ones who actually approve or deny people depending on if they're a good fit. So we want this community to be just beautifully done. It's the best way to describe it, and intimate. So check it out, joinhampton.com. And last but not least, I say this podcast is a lot of work, but guess what? It's not a lot of work for me because I hired Lower Street. You guys can check them out, lowerstreet.co/moneywise. They've made making this podcast way easier, way easier. All right, I'll see you next episode. And please let me know what you think in the comment sections of the podcast app and leave us a review. See ya.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It offers flexible spending capacity that adapts to your business. You can also earn up to $395 in annual statement credits on eligible purchases at select business merchants. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.